Cultivate Simple, Episode 15, Stocking the Larder.
Wassail all over the town.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainside. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, episode 15. Wait a minute. Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. And this is episode 15, and today we're discussing stocking the larder. The larder. A little place under the stairs.
You've got a lot of energy this evening.
Which is crazy kind of because it's a turnaround from
radio
about an hour
going.
Ago. We were... Today's been... The last couple days, I should say, have been fun. Lots of interesting things going on. We talked last week about our wassail party that we were going to, which when I said that to our neighbors down below today, they were like, wassail? What are you talking about? And I said, wassail? Oh, wassail. So we went to a wassailing party, which is how I believe it is actually pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is, the apple guy from here in Maine, invited us and a bunch of other people over to bless the fruit trees or to scare away the evil spirits or to sing around the largest tree. So what Wikipedia says, which, you know, the Book of Knowledge can always be trusted, is that...
Everything on the internet is true.
Right. That this is... That apple orchard wassailing... is held on the old 12th night, which is typically January 17th. So we were a couple days late, but that's what we did on the 19th. And is a ritual to ask God for a good apple harvest. The villagers circle around the largest apple tree, which we did in his orchard. They hang pieces of toast that have been soaked in cider in the branches for the robins, who represent the good spirits of the tree. A shotgun is fired overhead to scare away the evil spirits, and the group sings.
Wassail, wassail all over the town. Our toast it is white, and our ale it is brown. Our bowl it is laid on the white maple tree. With a wassailing bowl, we'll drink to thee.
Instead, everybody brought musical instruments, and so we banged on them and... We didn't bring any, so we just whistled.
No, you should have taken your slide whistle.
That would have been awesome, the slide whistle. It's such...
You missed your opportunity.
I did. That stinks. Why? Oh, man. That would have been awesome. Everybody's screaming and yelling and banging
You're
on
like,
pots and pans.
What?
That would have been great. I love my slide whistle. And John gave kind of a toast, and it's actually in Wikipedia, but I want to read it here. It says, old apple tree, we've come to wassail thee, to bear and to bow the apples enow, hats full, caps full, three bushel bags full, barn doors full, and a little heap under the stairs. And that was just, it was really neat.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. We got to try various ciders from around the area, some hard, some not, and... they had a campfire, and then we moved, after we did the wassailing of the apple tree, then we went over to John's house, and there was a big potluck dinner, so it was just a whole lot of fun. But yes, we also call it wassail, and we drink that quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you put in our wassail normally when we're having it?
Allspice, berries, cinnamon, sticks, some slices of ginger, a few peppercorns, some cloves,
Just all kinds of like Christmassy mulling spices, yeah. And apple cider, of course. And so a lot of times you'll let that sit on the wood stove or on the stove for, you know, an hour or two and just kind of mull and get good and then
actually have the recipe online.
Do you really?
For my mulling spices.
Well, I suppose we will put a link to that in the show notes then.
It's over on the Your Day blog on ethelgloves.com.
So we can
looking at that right now.
Put a link to that in the show notes and and share that with everyone. But that was really a fun time last night. And yeah, but that kind of pooped us out for today because there was a lot of activity and stimulation and everything a highly sensitive person hates. And so Susie's been kind of tired out today, but I went down and helped our neighbor cut some wood this morning and get keep his firewood stocked, keep his larder full with firewood. And so, yeah, we were feeling a little bit tired a little while ago, but then Susie made us a wonderful dinner, which brings us on to our new segment of the show. What's for dinner? That's my jingle. Because Eat Outside the Bag is all about our simple food, right?
Right.
I mean, what was your idea behind that website? It was basically to share...
Yeah, real simple food.
Simple food recipes and ideas and a way to use the things that, you know...
Seasonal, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right. And so, what was for dinner tonight? Tell us a little bit about our dinner tonight, Susie.
We had a beef stew of sorts, more like, well, it was venison actually, because that's what we eat around here. So it was venison roast that I braised, I guess you could say, in a big cast iron Dutch oven for a couple hours with some carrots and parsnips and some peas from the freezer.
And what did that? And that also had a can of Guinness in it, right?
Yes, I threw a can of Guinness in it. And I put some kelp in there.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular batch, it was bladder wreck.
Bladder wreck? Kelp?
Yeah, it's a kind of a seaweed. And I try to, we have like four or five different kinds of seaweed in the pantry. And I put some kelp on, you know. We sprinkle dulse on salads, sometimes in our omelets. I also have sea lettuce that I put in other things that we eat. Bladder wreck is good if you're doing like a long cooking, slow cooking recipe to throw it in there. It adds a lot of extra. Kelp is like a superfood. It has tons of vitamins, minerals, and all kinds of stuff in it. So throw a little bit in there and you don't even notice it in a recipe. Mm-hmm. It'll add like an interesting, subtle flavor that you don't even notice. It just kind of goes with everything.
And it adds some... I don't want to say texture, but it adds color or, you know, it adds
like the dulse is a really pretty like mahogany kind of color. So it looks great sprinkled on a salad, but so I added some kelp to there. I added a couple pieces of astragalus root because I add that anytime I'm making any kind of soup or, braising or any of that kind of stuff, any long cooking, that's really good to boost your immune system. And, it's just a all around good health tonic that you can take every day if you want. Some people do. I just throw it in any time we're eating a soup, and I throw it in whenever I'm making stock. I threw some chicken stock in there and oddly enough a couple of chicken feet which is those got fished out and fed to the dog. But I mean, if you don't have a lot of knuckles and bones and that kind of stuff to put in, if you're not making a stock or if you don't have stock to put in there, if you throw a couple chicken feet in your soup when you're cooking it, any kind of a braising liquid, then it adds a lot of collagen, gelatin, and that kind of good healthiness to your soups and your stocks, which helps boost immunity. I mean, collagen helps your skin, keeps you from getting wrinkles. It's really good for you in general, for your blood vessels, all of that kind of stuff. So good thing to add. One of those weird things. All these ways I always talk about how you can layer in lots of extra nutrition into your food so that you get a lot more bang for your buck when you eat. In essence, it was, I started this and it went down like this long thing. So what we had was like a venison vegetable gravy over mashed potatoes and celery root.
Mm-hmm.
So the celery root I got at the farmer's market, the potatoes came out of the larder, of course. And then the venison came from the freezer because that was one that Mr. Chiyotz got in November during hunting season. And the carrots came from the farmer's market. The parsnips came from the farmer's markets. They were fresh. The peas came from the freezer. I froze them. I also put some spinach that I had whored up, and I like to whir up spinach and freeze like spinach puree in these little containers and throw it in soups whenever I make it to add extra nutrition. I also added a little frozen thing of garlic scapes from the summer. I added fresh garlic and fresh onions also from the larder or from the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So.
And then a pint of smoked turkey stock from the freezer as well.
Whenever we have people over for dinner we'll even take some sort of a dish to a get together or something. And people will, especially when we have people over and, you know, Susie cooks the whole meal, people will always comment like, oh, geez, this is just wonderful. This is just amazing. And I always say, this is pretty normal. And as you can tell, I mean, that's like a normal meal. But while it sounds complicated and complex, it's actually...
It's about as simple as you can get, really.
Yeah.
Because you throw everything in a pot and throw it on the stove and turn it on. If we're burning wood in the wood burner, I throw it on there all day. And if not, then I throw it in the on the stove on one of my small burners on low. Because I don't have a crock pot, so I use a big enameled cast iron Dutch oven on a burner on low for my crock pot. And yeah, you throw it in there. And then the potatoes you make, a half hour before you're going to eat, which is essentially boiling them and then mashing them. So
And the other thing with us too is that a lot of times how many times have we eaten that? Four times?
Twice. Three times.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's more than twice. But that's, it's so good that you don't mind eating it multiple times, but you make it once and then you can eat on it multiple times.
And if you don't eat it multiple times in a week, because that's not a big deal for us. We don't mind doing that.
Right.
But sometimes we'll eat it twice, and then I'll freeze the rest, and then you have a quick meal in the freezer ready to go, so.
But of course, we don't mind eating it because it's good.
That's right.
Because we did, at the party last night, they had the what's that called?
Food. Oh, like a potluck.
Yeah, like potluck. Thank you. I completely blanked on that word. Like a potluck dinner. And so everybody brought something. And we left there. And Susie's like, please use some salt and pepper. Because a lot of people make their food very bland and don't add a lot of flavor and complexity. Or I shouldn't say complexity, but complexity or layers.
Layering stuff really helps. Like the chicken feet in your stock are going to add a texture to your sauce that you're not going to get without adding that, because they add there's a reason that oxtail stew is considered such a wonderful delicacy, because all of the collagen in the oxtails adds like a really interesting velvety texture to the sauce. And there's a reason you braise beef shanks and then the sauce is just rich and amazing. It's because of all the collagen. So adding a couple of chicken feet to your roasts whenever you make them are going to make the stock and the liquid that's in there that you turn into the gravy, it's going to add another layer of kind of a velvety texture in a complexity of flavor that you're not going to get otherwise. And the same goes for adding maybe some salt and some pepper, and adding things like when I made that this time, I decided to use juniper berries because that's supposed to be a classic thing to eat with venison, as opposed to often I just use salt and pepper and thyme, like your classic what's that called? What, I can't think of it, where you tie up the herbs together. Bouquet garni.
And if not, it sounds good. That was like good save.
Usually I do that, but this time I did juniper, which was interesting because it adds like an interesting sweet tone to the gravy. So yeah, adding and the astragalus will add in a slight layer of flavor. It's interesting. Adding mushrooms is a great way to increase the flavor and the complexity of the things that you're making. I didn't add mushrooms to this because I didn't have any, but adding mushrooms to a soup adds some incredible flavor and a really interesting
And so besides cooking time, how much time do you think you had tied up in that?
don't know, maybe 20 minutes.
Okay.
Tops.
Yeah.
I would say.
But you're a good slicer, so for the average person, maybe
I'm
a half
pretty
hour.
Pretty efficient at cutting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I made two venison roasts, so it makes twice as much as I normally do, and I'll probably freeze half of it. So then someday when we're super busy, all I have to do is take it out of the freezer in the morning and put it on the counter and then heat it up for supper that night. So that's one of the things I like to do, is make double batches of everything and freeze half of it, because then you have instant homemade meals. Some things you have to be careful, like potatoes don't freeze, so you don't want to be making beef stew with potatoes in it, because they're going to have a weird texture. But just omit the potatoes from that recipe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good, I think that's a good tip too for saving time in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, almost all of, well, a lot of this came from the larder, from
right.
the basement, from the pantry, and even all of the spices, because since you buy all of the spices and the kelp, or the seaweed and all that stuff in bulk, we have all that around. And then the rest of it came from the farmer's market mm-hmm. that was fresh.
Right.
That had, you know, just been harvested, and so it was extremely good, flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what we wanted to talk about today, was stocking your larder, not only
Aren't
with...
Are you going to talk about your birthday?
Well,
later.
You just right. totally ruined... Ruined.
Hey, I don't want you to miss your birthday.
All right. Well, we might as well talk about it now. Hey, listeners. Would you like to help out an old man?
That's right. You're going to be old this year.
Well, I'm officially hitting late 30s.
Late 30s. Oh, no.
You're married to an old man.
That's right.
I'll
be catching up this summer.
Yeah, so my birthday's this week, and... I was just thinking about it and thinking, you know, we're not big, just so you know, we're not big on celebrating birthdays or
we don't
many
even
holidays.
We don't really celebrate birthdays at all.
No,
I mean... We may have an extra cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And that's about as celebratory as we get.
Well, and you made me...
I made him a bourbon walnut pie.
Yeah, which was really good. Which is probably another reason we're tired, because we had bourbon walnut pie and bourbon walnut whipped cream maple.
Bourbon maple
Bourbon
cream.
Maple.
Yeah.
For a little bit of a snack with our coffee this afternoon, so we were a little sleepy. But yeah, so we're not really big into celebrating birthdays. Usually, I think last year I even completely missed mine. And even our anniversary, we're kind of, I mean, for us, every day is kind of a celebration of each other. So we don't really have to set, that sounds so cheesy, but we really don't have to set
really
aside.
Cheesy.
Every day is a celebration of one another.
That was terrible.
But it's true, isn't it? I mean,
that's right.
It does
we
sound
say
cheesy.
It's weird to pick out one day and, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it is weird.
It's weird to make one day special when you can make every day special.
Right.
You know, and I think that we really tried to do that in our lives.
I think birthdays are funny, because why do you get stuff? It's your mom that did all the work. You know what I mean? I always think that's weird. Like, really, on your birthday, you should be giving your mom presents, because you just, you know, showed up.
That is true. The stork just dropped you off.
Oh, that's right.
That's all I know about it. So what we're going to do is I'm actually going to post a link to an Amazon wish list. And so if you feel so inclined to buy me a birthday gift, I would very much appreciate it. So I put some items on there that are, if there's any of you out there that are millionaires and just want to throw around some dough.
Thousandaires.
Yes, because I put the planer and molder that I want on there, which is $1,100. But there are other items on there. And so if you...
Do you have any items for 99 cents?
No, there are no... I don't know. Are there... I'm sure there are items on Amazon for 99 cents. But there are quite a few books on there that are around $10, $15. And so if you want to show a little love to Mr. Chiots this week on his birthday,
to
and
the person that keeps the blog running.
Ease the fact that he's now 37 in his downward spiral.
Oh, you've crested the top, huh?
Yeah.
You're on your way down.
I am. I'm over the hill. Who knows? then we're going to put a link to that in the show notes. You can go to the Amazon wish list, and it's really easy to, and actually if you go, I don't know if you go through the affiliate link, if that'll give us like double goodness, but that'd be wonderful. So before Susie totally messed up my segue there. So let's just pretend like we're back at that point. Yes, you got everything from the larder. Isn't that awesome? So that's what we're going to be talking about today is storing up things that you can have around, that either by preserving things that you grow yourself or just having things around that are good ingredients to go into a lot of different recipes. So,
and it's something I think that's, this is the time of the year to think about it, because mm-hmm. this is the time that you're going to be using it. So right. if you don't have it right now, it's something that you can think about what you need to do in order to get to that point so that next year you do. Mm-hmm. Plan out different kinds of storage vegetables to grow in your garden, that kind of stuff. And I've had a lot of questions recently. I think a lot of people are thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of blog readers are asking about canning, preserving, drying, fermenting, freezing, all of that kind of stuff, and kind of asking what I do, what my methods, what I prefer to do, recommendations, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of the time to think about it, because it's the time that you're planning for next year almost. Mm-hmm. At this time. I ordered my seed potatoes this past week, and I ordered most of my seeds for the garden this past week too. So, it's definitely the time to be thinking about that. And I definitely, as the years go on, I try to grow more and more things that I can harvest to eat fresh
mm-hmm.
in the winter, and more things that I can just harvest and put in baskets and put down in the root cellar instead of having to can and freeze, and I'm not adding extra work for myself. So this year I'm definitely focusing on growing. This past year we couldn't really do that since we moved, and mm-hmm. we were kind of in between places, and
so the larder is kind of bare.
The timing didn't work out for us to plant things to be able to harvest in Ohio before we left, and we didn't have time to come up here and plant anything before that would be ready for the fall. So, mm-hmm. I did get potatoes. I think I harvested, 200 pounds of potatoes or something like that, but that's it. We couldn't grow any carrots. Generally we grow winter carrots and leeks and that kind of stuff, but we didn't have, that wasn't an option this year. Mm-hmm. So in this coming year, we'll definitely do that. I'm also adding a bunch of celeriac. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting vegetable that we've really started to like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And parsnips and rutabagas and what's that other one, turnips.
Mm-hmm.
So
and that's something to consider too when you are looking through the seed catalogs. It's it's kind of like permaculture and the idea of stacking that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only what to grow, how much to grow, but this will taste good, and this will look neat, and this will store.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about apples, because we were talking about our mm-hmm. plans for the orchard this week, and there are a lot of apples that are good for eating straight away. So you get them off the tree, you eat. There are a lot that are good for cooking. There are a lot of good that for storing. So mm-hmm. for like applesauces and those types of things. And there are also a lot that are good for
root
saving
cellaring.
So that you can put them in the root cellar, and there's different ways to store them, but they typically harvest also later in the year.
And that's one of the things I think you need to think about a little bit and plan ahead on. So mm-hmm. like potatoes, one of the things you need to be mindful of when you're buying potatoes is when they're ready for harvest. Mm-hmm. So when you buy potatoes, I should put a link into the thing that I put on my Facebook page. Main Potato Lady has a really good chart in her catalog. And I put it in on my Facebook page.
And if you click like on the Facebook page, you would have seen that. Go ahead.
But yeah, so there are things to consider. It's not just like You don't just buy some potatoes and throw them in the ground and throw them in your root cellar and expect them to keep the whole time. Mm-hmm. There are some varieties of potatoes that store better than others, and some don't store.
Some won't keep. Yeah.
Some don't keep hardly at all. You pretty much have to eat them within a month. Onions are very similar. You know, certain kinds of leeks store better than others. Certain garlic. Kinds keep better in the garden. Garlic is exactly the same way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's one of the things, if you want to get more into root cellaring and stuff, that's one of the things you need to think about when you're ordering. And if you're ordering from a good place, that's one of the reasons you want to order. I would recommend ordering from more of a specialty place, like your potatoes. Get them from Maine Potato Lady, because she has all that information there that tells you. So when I'm ordering my potatoes, I order some early season, like some early harvest ones, early mm-hmm. season. I order mid-season. I order late season, because the early season, they're ready to harvest really quickly. You can harvest new potatoes a lot faster. So then those are some potatoes that you're going to be eating in the summer
mm-hmm.
to kind of fill in that gap from your root cellar to the next winter. And then your mid-season potatoes, you know, you harvest in the middle. And typically those aren't going to store quite as long as like a late-season potato. But then the ones that you harvest the latest, if they're a long-storing potato, they're going to be the ones that you're going to be eating in March and April and maybe into May.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the reasons is because they are harvested later. So if they come out of the ground, you know, 3 weeks after the mid-season potatoes, that gives you an extra 3 weeks into the
Of freshness,
yeah. And three more weeks in the larder that they're going to keep. So, I mean, that's something that you need to consider. And it's, I mean, it may sound kind of confusing, but isn't really. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and that's one reason I recommend ordering from kind of a specialty place sometimes.
Well, and most seed catalogs even will say if they're good storage, when they're harvested,
right.
You know, how long they take. And that's, in thinking about that, it's really interesting, because if you do plan ahead and you do think like this, the winter actually isn't the hard part. It's actually April, May, before the next season kicks in.
Yeah.
You know, when the larder's starting to run a little dry.
Right. And you can buy, there are some interesting varieties of vegetables that you can buy for those seasons. And they're mm-hmm. often called, there's one that's called Hunger Gap Kale. And it's a kale that you overwinter, that it's extremely hardy. And it is producing during that time when mm-hmm. perhaps your larder stores are getting really low and your spinach and your early spring greens aren't coming up yet. Maybe the dandelion greens aren't up in the yard or whatever. So, you know, some of those things can fill that gap. I have found in my personal experience, red Russian kale that I plant in the fall to overwinter. I mean, I plant it, you know, in the summer, spring or summer of 1 year, and I kind of harvest it, and then I just kind of let it do its thing. It overwinters, and then early in the spring, really early, it starts throwing off the little flower heads, which you can harvest like broccoli, and it's really, really good. And man, I had, I think, 2 or 3 Russian kale plants in the garden last year, and we had broccolini, I don't know, kale buds is what they're called, mm-hmm. but it's like broccolini kind of. We ate those for almost a month
mm-hmm.
and tons of fresh vegetables right at that time when there you just feel like there's nothing out there, you know, and right when you're really craving something fresh and green from the garden, they're there. And those things produce like you wouldn't believe. So, I mean, from this one plant, you've gotten leaves in the fall and leaves in the winter for your soups, and then you get the kale buds in the spring. And then if you let it then go to seed, you can collect the seeds in the summer, and then you can use those then and have sprouts if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can use them as a sprouting seed. So, I mean, that's another interesting way to kind of look at vegetables instead of, I think a lot of people look at things very...
like a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And trying to
which
incorporate...
which many vegetables are.
Yeah, and many of them are. But if you try to look for some of these vegetables mm-hmm. that... are a little more, I mean, they're more efficient if you think about it as far as what you get out of them. They, you know, the production value for your input is way better than some other vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another great way to look at some things is maximizing your inputs,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
But, and before we get into actually the different techniques and different things that you use and you recommend and you do. What we're really talking about is eating seasonally.
Right.
And really forcing yourself in a way
yeah.
To to eat what is in season rather than, I mean, if you go to a grocery store, you can go to a grocery store 365 days a year and there's going to be a tomato in the produce section.
Right.
But that tomato, A, you don't know where it was grown, and B, it's not fresh, you know,
and it's going to taste like
crap. That's right, kid. Say it at home along. Crap.
It's going to be mealy and nasty and, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be as good as like a celery root or a rutabaga or a parsnip, mm-hmm. you know, or frost-kissed kale. I mean, that's good eating right there mm-hmm. when you...
And fresh year-round.
Yeah, and I think some of these vegetables, too, have a bad reputation. Like kale can have a bad reputation mm-hmm. as being bitter. I don't know. But I think a lot of times, if you've never had a locally grown version of something, you should never write it off that you don't like it.
Right. That's true.
Because chances are you're going to buy, and if you haven't tried to cook it a couple different ways, you can't really write it off as mm-hmm. something you look, because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of braised greens. We do eat braised greens with eggs poached on top quite often, even though it's not particularly our favorite meals, right. But it's healthy and it's in season and it's
well, and sometimes you have to take a big person pill and
right.
eat what's good for you rather than,
well,
you know,
what you like, you know,
than cake.
But, you know, kale in like a sausage soup is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So try it that way. Try adding it into something that you like. Yeah, try to think outside the box as far as that's concerned and try a few different recipes before you write off any one vegetable. And, you know, like rutabagas, I mean, sometimes maybe you just got a couple of bad rutabagas and they were bitter because it was a really dry summer, or they were harvested before the frost, or one of those kinds of things. I mean, you don't know, so try it a couple different times from a couple different local places, and mm-hmm. chances are, I mean, you're gonna find out that parsnips are really good.
That sounds like an ebook idea.
As are turnips. As are rutabagas.
How to know when you have a bad rutabaga.
Give rutabaga a chance.
That'd be a good t-shirt. All we are saying. Never mind. But eating seasonally also does, not only is it better because everything that you're eating is fresh and it hasn't been stored, because some storage methods do destroy or, well, not destroy, but damage the nutrients yeah. and the vitamins right. and the minerals right. that are part of the food that you're eating. But also, when you think about it, as we've talked about a couple weeks ago or last week, when you're going out to the garden and picking something and bringing it in and eating it, or preparing it and eating it, you're not using any energy, like, say, you know, for canning, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Right.
Canning takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of inputs as far as heat is concerned, and time.
And water. And
yeah.
All of those things. Yeah, definitely.
And plus the supplies. So you uh-huh. need to buy the canning lids, which cost right. money, but are also, you know, a one-time use and then disposable.
Right. Unless you use the Weck jars, which have the rubber seal and the glass lids. But
right. But even freezing, you know, freezing, right. you need freezer space.
You and need we electricity
do,
for... Yeah.
And we do have two freezers. You know, and
we only had one until we moved here, but they left a freezer here, right. so
which was good because once we got our deer, then it was
right,
you know.
But I think everything could be consolidated into one if we wanted to,
which we could do as we get into the season and mm-hmm. as the one gets emptied out. But still, that uses electricity. And again, we're going to talk about freezing here in a second. So it's more delicious. It uses electricity. There's less waste because of all these sort of byproducts and mm-hmm. Side things. And you can have a wider variety of food. And it gets you really to appreciate things when they are in season. We talked about strawberries last week. And
right.
strawberries are one of my favorite fruits, probably only second to apples. And I just love, you know, that couple weeks in June when the strawberries are on, and we eat them for at least once a day. for a whole meal. We'll have, you know, strawberry shortcake or something for a meal because we just really want to appreciate them. And again, strawberries are one of those things. You can go to a grocery store and get conventionally grown strawberries pretty much year round. But they don't taste like anything. They taste like cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the strawberries that we're going out, picking fresh, bringing in, slicing up, and putting into some strawberry shortcake, those are the most delicious things you will ever taste in your life. But you only get them for, say, 2 weeks out of the year. So, but again, that makes you appreciate those different things as they come in seasonally. And there are things that you can do to preserve those things through jellies and all those types of things. But again, that takes a lot more inputs through, you know, for a jelly, it takes a lot of sugar,
right.
Cooking time, preparation. And so...
Right. And this podcast is all about, and something we really have been trying to focus on, is simplifying your life. And if you can, and I think for us, that has been to minimize some of the things that we do in order to maximize the time that we have to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
So for me in the summer, I would much rather be outside gardening than I would be inside canning green beans, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather spend my time outside planting beds of carrots and rutabagas and parsnips and spinach and that kind of stuff to harvest and put in the root cellar in the fall, or to keep under a cold frame to harvest in the winter, than I want to be spending in canning green beans, because I want to eat my green beans fresh from the garden.
Right.
I don't want to eat them out of a jar in January. I also don't want to be eating green beans all year long. That's just one of those things. Also, I want really something we've really tried to focus on is making our diet a little more in tune with what's going on in nature around us. So, yeah. So in the spring, we eat lots of fresh, light salads and, you know, dandelion greens and that kind of stuff. And it's interesting when you read about all those things is... you know, I think the healthiest thing for you to be consuming as far as vitamins and minerals for what you need at that given time is what is available
being produced in nature
in your area. So, you know, in the spring, dandelion greens are super good for cleansing the liver, and they're very tonic and that kind of thing. And that's because you've had a winter of eating more like heavier, hearty, more fatty, more hearty things, because that's how it kind of is. Naturally, almost like that's what you want in the winter. You want like those comforting heavy stews and root vegetables and that kind of stuff. So then in the spring, you eat all those things that kind of cleanse your liver.
Detox,
and they're light and they're fresh, and you know, and then in the high summer, you're eating tomatoes and green beans and that kind of thing, you know. And then you transition into the fall where you're eating a, you know, kind of a little more like the summer or the spring again with the greens and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think that it kind of brings everything into tune almost. And it helps, I don't know, it's a very mindful, a more mindful way to live too. And especially if you're trying to eat locally and support local farmers, it's something you kind of do as well for that. And it's just a lot more simple.
Right.
You know, to me, I would rather plant an extra row of potatoes than an extra row of green beans to can. So I'm going to dig up the potatoes, put them in baskets or bags. I keep mine in brown paper bags and put them down in the root cellar, and then pull those out during the winter instead of cracking open. I can't, you know, spending however long, I mean, it takes you, I can't think of how long it takes to can green beans, but you know,
you really don't like canning green beans, do you? You've mentioned that's like kind of
that's just like the one everybody does though. That's why I mentioned that. That's like
green beans
is like probably the most canned thing that people do. A lot of people can green beans. It's like,
I wonder why.
Because it's one of the most productive garden plants.
That's true. And they all kind of come on in one flush.
So,
yeah,
but it's just one of those things. So, I mean, if you want to can green beans, you've got to have a pressure canner, which if you're going to get a good one, you know, you want made in the USA one, it's going to cost you $200, $250, which, you can use that for years and years and years, but you also need the gas or the electric or the energy to heat that thing up and run it for an hour and a half, depending on, you know, how long it takes to do your batch of beans or whatever.
Which then in the summer heats up your home, which then if you live in a hot climate, you're running the air conditioning to cool your house back down.
Right, to cool your house, and then you're using water for that process, and you're picking the beans, and you're snapping the beans, and you're putting them in the jars, and you're buying the jar lids, and you're putting it in the canner, and you're canning them, and you're taking them out, and you're cooling them down, and then you're putting them in the root cellar, and then you're cracking them open in January.
And reheating them.
I'd rather dig some potatoes, put them in a bag, put them in the root cellar, and go out and plant some turnips.
Yeah.
And then instead of eating green beans in January, I'm going to be eating turnips and
whatever's in season.
Potatoes.
Yeah.
And rutabagas and leeks and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's just a whole different kind of... Because I used to can. When I first started gardening, it was what I grew up doing. My mom was a canner. We had a huge garden in the summer, and we'd spend all summer gardening and canning. Like, there's no tomorrow. I mean, my mom would can quarts and quarts and quarts and quarts of green beans. And that's just like, seriously.
Back to the green beans.
Green beans, I'm telling you. So you didn't grow up in a canning family, so you don't know about the green beans. But seriously, I mean, there are green beans coming out of your ears in the summer. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did in the summer. And then you ate canned green beans all winter, you know? So, you know, when I first started gardening, I kind of I had a canner. My mom gave me her old pressure canner, and then I had a water bath canner. And the first time I pressure canned something, I was like, really? This is a whole lot of work for 7 quarts of green beans or whatever. I mean, it's a lot of work and a lot of energy. And I thought to myself, that's just a lot. Seems like a lot of
waste.
A lot of waste. Yeah. So, and then I started reading a little bit more about what I could grow that I didn't have to preserve or other ways of preserving. And I don't freeze green beans either. I just don't eat green beans in the winter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can freeze them more. You can freeze them as well, but there are very few things now that I freeze or preserve, and we eat kind of out of season. We do some jams and jellies, not very many. Maybe we may eat 6 pints of jelly over the year, if that. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. Like
half
pints.
A lot of them we get from people as gifts.
The little half pint jars. Yeah. We pretty much stick to butter if we're eating toast, just because we try not to eat sugar. So.
A lot of sugar.
And jams really can add a lot of extra sugar to your diet. So, I mean, I might can a few preserves. I might... What else do I... I make some chutneys sometimes. Mm-hmm. I freeze peas. I always freeze some peas. And I generally can some tomato soup. I have a really good recipe for home canned tomato soup. And I do that. I water bath can it for, it's like 25 minutes or something like that. I use an old recipe, so it's not considered safe by the USDA. But,
So let's talk about some of the specific techniques and what we do in each of those techniques or the things that we do. So the first one's dehydrating. Dehydrating is a really good way to preserve fruits. We like doing fruits that way.
We love pears, dehydrated pears.
Dehydrated pears are really good, and you can just eat them all year round. I mean, they're just great. They get super sweet when you dehydrate them and concentrate that flavor. And one thing that we're looking to do in order to make this a little bit easier and also to use less energy, I don't know... We might not get to it this summer. We kind of hope we do, but is to build a solar dehydrator.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look up solar dehydrator on YouTube, you'll see some awesome videos of some huge dehydrators.
Right.
And they're very simple to build, very simple concepts, but can do just a great job and have several. I mean, you can make them as big as you want. Mm-hmm. There's one video that I was watching that the trays are 3 feet by 3 feet, and I think they have 20 of them in the dehydrator, which, I mean, you could dehydrate a lot of stuff.
Right.
So fruits are really good for dehydrating. What else? What else would you...
You can dehydrate kale. You can dehydrate spinach. You can dehydrate herbs. Mm-hmm. Tomatoes. I grow a little tomato that's called Principe Borghese, and it's the specific kind of tomato that's really good for sun drying.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of those. Instead of your typical canning tomatoes, I can a few tomatoes, not very many anymore. I used to can a lot more than I do, but I barely do that anymore. I prefer drying these little tomatoes.
And then you can put those onto,
you can sandwiches. Rehydrate them, chop them up, put them in sandwiches, put them in your omelets, put them on your pizza.
Or just
put
eat them.
Or just eat them. Yeah, they're really good as snacks. Is, like raisins. Like mm-hmm. They're like savory raisins. And I mean, you can buy a dehydrator. I've mm-hmm. heard good things about the Excalibur. I know tons of people that have that mm-hmm. and really love it. We had borrowed a little one from a friend. My oven actually has a dehydrate setting. So mm-hmm. I have a bunch of oven racks and I throw it in there and set the temperature and dehydrate in there. And I can dehydrate a huge amount of stuff in there. So mm-hmm. I always use that to maximize my energy. But at our old house, I did a lot of dehydrating in the attic. Mm-hmm. So I would put stuff up there on screens or on, I would put cheesecloth over like the cooling racks that you mm-hmm. cool your cookies on. I have 5 or 6 really big ones that are about as big as an oven rack. And I would put cheesecloth on there. And then if the fruit was small, if it was big, I would just lay it on there. And I would put it up on our attic, which stayed about 100 degrees. And then I would put a fan up there to circulate air. And that worked really well to dehydrate stuff. I mean, it's like a big solar dehydrator kind mm-hmm. of. And that worked really well. I also made my yogurt up there because it was the perfect temperature. Mm-hmm. So that's another option. I mean, sometimes you just have to think about using what you have. Mm-hmm.
Well, and last night at the wassail party that we went to, John, the way that they had a wood burner, mm-hmm. radiant heat. What's it called?
That's now you put me on the spot.
See, sorry. It's a big wood stove that was surrounded
like
by rocks.
Heat one.
So it was but they actually had set a screen on top of that to dehydrate some things, and then they had exposed beams in their home, and they had kind of like these nets that would hang in between the mm-hmm. exposed beams.
It was
beams.
Almost like window screens that they put up there. And then
that
they
would
had,
hang between the exposed beams, and they had apple slices in those that they were dehydrating. So since all the heat from their wood stove would go up into those mm-hmm. spaces, but yet the air was circulating. So I thought that was, another interesting
way to do it.
Think outside of, the typical get a dehydrator and...
Well, and it's interesting to think about this because... Up until, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, people weren't preserving foods the way that we preserve them now. They had less energy intensive methods of doing it. Mm-hmm. And that had been done for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So thinking a little bit more about how perhaps it was done before and maybe some of the methods that probably produce... They take less energy and they produce healthier options of what we
mm-hmm. and that
what we eat.
That kind of brings us on to the next method, which we didn't originally have on our list, but smoking. Smoking is another good way to
and that's similar to dehydrating, kind of. Mm-hmm. The smoke is supposed to be like a natural antimicrobial, antibacterial kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Plus it adds flavor.
Right.
So depending on what you're smoking.
Yeah.
And this is something that we really haven't gotten into that much.
I've
just
been
because
wanting to build a smoker.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things that
we never got around to. But it's definitely something we're going to explore. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was neat, and the reason I thought of this was I had that image of the first season of the River Cottage TV show where he actually I don't know if he had, I think he had bricks removed from
his chimney
on his house.
And had a little door put in.
Yeah, and so then he could just hang various meats that he had made, sausages and so on, in his chimney to smoke, which I thought was really interesting.
Like in Laura Ingalls Wilder, they used an old hollow tree for smoking and hung the venison and stuff in the top of it.
Yeah, Laura Ingalls Wilder books are like how-to homesteading
books. If you read The Little House in the Big Woods is the one that, if you read that, it's like how to preserve your food without... I mean, she did a little preserving. They made some tomato jam and that kind of stuff she talks about in the books. But yeah, most of it's like making cheese to preserve your milk because that's a great way to preserve your milk without any refrigeration. Mm-hmm. Making butter because that preserves your cream without the need of refrigeration. I mean, it's that some of the products that we eat every day were actually kind of invented because it was a way to preserve stuff because there wasn't any refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
Sauerkraut, all those kinds of things.
which brings us on to the next type of preserving, and that's fermentation.
Right, which is something we've definitely gotten a lot more into over the past couple years, partly because when I first started reading about it, it was more about the probiotics and the health aspect of it. And then it just made sense that it's a great way to preserve stuff without needing to can it. So like pickles, I mean, you can make big containers of pickles and keep them in. You might need to keep them in an extra refrigerator if you don't have a root cellar that stays quite cool enough. But yeah, I mean, then you don't have to be canning your pickles and stuff and sauerkraut. And, you know, not only is this an easy way to preserve that doesn't use a lot of energy, it actually makes your food healthier as opposed to robbing it of its nutrients and kind of watering down the nutritional value of your food.
Right.
So it actually makes it healthier, and it makes it so that your body can absorb more nutrients from it. So, and the probiotics help keep you healthier, boost your immune system. I mean, when you really start reading about all the traditional ways of preserving food, they all enhanced the quality of the food, as opposed to a lot of the more modern methods actually degrade the quality of your food. So, I mean, that's an interesting thing to kind of think about too. If even if it weren't more simple and more energy efficient, it would be better to do just from a health perspective. I mean, you're going to all that trouble to grow your own green beans or whatever because they're healthier and all your own garden produce. Why not try to maximize it and get the most out of it that you can?
It seems like as you were just talking about that, because I know that you had an old canning book too, that I think my dad gave us or we found somewhere. And we were talking about the times that they recommend for canning and for how long to have things in the pressure canner and so on. And I think that book was from the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I also have a couple from the 50s. And I think I have one that's from the 40s.
And it's interesting how as time progresses, how the times get longer as far as how long you're supposed to cook the crap out of your food.
Right. To make it safe.
To make it safe. And it's almost like as this is, you know, total interesting, but it's almost like as the government has taken it over and said, oh, well, the USDA says that this is what you need to do in order to make this safe. It's actually made it less healthy because you're, you know, degrading more of the vitamins and breaking down the minerals by boiling the, you know,
I think it's more about idiot-proofing it.
Right. That's true.
Because they have to make it long enough so that, you know, I mean, if you've never canned before, you know, you have to bring it to a boil and then time it and then all that. But, I mean, I think that they had to make it so that you could include that time that you're not, it's not at a rolling boil or whatever, all of that. So it's kind of like the more people get into it, the longer they have to say to do it, to idiot-proof it so that the people who don't know what they're doing end up with, I don't know. Personally, I buy the old canning books, and whenever I did can, I'll use the times in those because I don't want to. I mean, I don't want to can something in a pressure canner for an hour and a half. Because really, if what you pull out the other end is there anything left?
Right. Yeah, and it doesn't taste as good. It doesn't. I mean, doesn't have the texture. It doesn't have the color. It's just. Yeah. But that's where fermenting actually, like you said, it's the opposite of that, though, because instead of breaking it down and changing it and making it mush, you know, one thing I like about the sauerkraut that we make is that it's still very crispy, you know, so it still has a crunch and a texture to it and a good taste. And like you said, the probiotics and everything else that goes along with it. So instead of taking things away from your food, you're actually adding too, as you said.
And along with fermenting, I think salting kind of, because fermenting is essentially adding some salt to your food, to the vegetables, and then allowing the natural yeasts and probiotics and stuff that are on the fruits and vegetables to take over. And the salt is supposed to inhibit the bad bacteria from forming and encourage the good bacteria to proliferate and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, essentially, it's salting your vegetables, throwing it in a jar, weighing down the top so air doesn't get in, and letting it sit for a while, and then eating it.
Yeah.
And you can tell, I mean, some people are kind of scared of this method because there's no, like, cooking it to keep it safe. Right. I mean, we live in a weirdly ultra safe society. So, you know, I mean, maybe your food is super safe, but what's the point of eating it if there's no nutritional value left to it?
Right. If it's just filling your stomach.
And yep. Personally, like, I'm not about to eat spinach from the grocery store. I mean, are you kidding me? That's to me, that's like the most unsafe thing you can think about eating, yeah. But I'm going to eat.
Especially if it comes from California.
Just but kidding. I don't in any way have any problem eating right. pickles that I make and put down in my root cellar that mm-hmm. are stored at, you know, 40 degrees for 3 months. Mm-hmm. That in no way do I feel that is not safe. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that's the thing about this kind of stuff. So you make sauerkraut, you know, and I've had so many people that make sauerkraut, they get all freaked out because they've never done that before. And we have this such like a weird antibacterial germophobia in this country that they're like, oh, I made sauerkraut. But then I was just so scared I threw the batch out because I couldn't bring myself to eat it because, you know.
Right.
I mean, if your batch of sauerkraut doesn't take, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It is rank.
Yes.
And it smells the whole house up.
It is, you know, if something is not good. Yeah. So if your batch of pickles doesn't take or whatever, which that I had one batch of sauerkraut once that didn't work out. And I think there was something weird about the cabbage. And that's the thing. If the vegetables aren't in good shape mm-hmm. and of good quality, the batch is probably going to go bad. So you don't want to eat it anyways.
Right.
But if you can find good, fresh, local stuff, it's going to ferment fine. Mm-hmm. And I'll also mention in this section, because I'm sure somebody's going to write in and mention this, but I don't follow like the nourishing tradition, the Sally Fallon method, where you add some tablespoons of whey to your fermenting. I prefer to let the natural probiotics in the whatever vegetable I'm fermenting kind of take over. Unless it's, you know, maybe some of the chutneys, I haven't dabbled in that too much. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if the vegetables don't have enough good probiotics on them to ferment naturally on their own, they're probably not the things you want to be fermenting. Mm-hmm. That's my personal like stance. Come up with your own, you know, if you feel more comfortable adding whey. I also feel like maybe that would, I mean, because you read about all the different types of beneficial bacteria that you can have in yogurt, you know, different kinds of yogurt have different ones. So I feel like if you're using whey in it, you're limiting yourself to mm-hmm. perhaps certain strains of probiotics that instead of having the natural ones that occur on the cabbage, you're having too many of the same ones instead mm-hmm. of a wider variety of it. So, I mean, that's my own personal
Well, and who knows? I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know about the life of a probiotic, but I mean, they could end up fighting each other and yeah, you could end up ruining a batch too. So yeah, it's just, and it's another step too. You right. know, it's another thing to do where the technique that you use is basically, you know, like with our sauerkraut, slice it,
throw some salt in it,
bash it up a bit, put some water in there and that's it. You know, it's easy. And it always makes me laugh because the first few days that sauerkraut is fermenting, it does smell a little funky.
It smells like cabbage. I mean, it's that like...
But it's a funky cabbage.
Yeah, I know what that's what it is though.
Yeah.
But then like the sauerkraut smell, like the probiotics take over and give it that sour, like the sauerkraut smell. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like the life cycle of that. And when you're making that, you know, pay attention to that kind of, and it's interesting because almost every batch you make is slightly different. And it's interesting to note the differences in each batch, depending on what kind of cabbage you're using. And you can tell when mm-hmm. you make it, if the cabbage is super fresh or if it's maybe not quite so fresh, depending on how much brine it forms itself. And I mean, it's definitely an interesting process to get into and to notice the subtle differences in all of the different batches that you make and the subtle flavor differences in the batches that you make. It's kind of like we're so used to homogenous food and always having everything taste the same. And while sauerkraut does kind of taste the same, there's definitely a slight difference in every batch that you make, mm-hmm. depending on the type of cabbage you use and even the type of salt that you use.
And this to just as a, on a personal note, but also just to encourage everybody that's listening that growing up as a kid, sort of like the fermented, you know, pickles, sauerkraut, all those things really grossed me out. They were just like nasty. But I think that's because for the most part, I was eating store-bought
crap.
From a can. Crap. From a.
It was probably sauerkraut that came in a bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. My grandpa made his own pickles. I remember that. But mm-hmm. but yeah, the sauerkraut came in a bag and it was dumped into a pot and cooked and served and nasty. And so when Susie started getting into this, I kind of wasn't really looking forward to it because I just never liked that type of stuff. But now I really love it. I love, you know, the pickles that she makes, the sauerkraut that she makes. In fact, we bought some sauerkraut because we wanted to eat it for New Year's. It's a German tradition, and her family is part German. So it's kind of a tradition in our family that we eat it for New Year's. So we bought some because we didn't have any made up. And
at the local, there's a little sauerkraut place down the road. A
little German shop. Yeah. Yeah.
And they make their own pickles and sauerkraut and that kind of stuff. So we bought some there.
And it was good. But even though it was good, it's still, you know, they had to add, what do they add? Is the, I want to say it's a sulfate, but I know it's
not
it.
No, it's the salt that they use that they add.
Yeah.
The salt they use, because once I was telling Brian, because it has like a slightly metallic aftertaste.
Yes, yes.
And it's the salt, because we use real salt. We use like exclusively sea salt. No like preservative additives or anti-caking or any of that stuff in it. It's salt from the sea.
Yeah.
And so you can definitely, it had that metallic aftertaste mm-hmm. because they probably use like Morton's pickling salt or one of those things right. that has, that's not, I mean, that kind of salt.
It's iodized or whatever.
Well, it's not iodized. Most people don't use iodized salt in pickling, but they still have some, most of those pickling salts still have like anti-caking agents and those kinds of things in it. Mm-hmm. And because it's a, I mean, the funny thing is Morton's salt comes from, I shouldn't name them by name because that's a way to get yourself like sued nowadays, but... comes the town that I grew, that I lived in part of my childhood, and where my parents still live in Ohio, is where Morton salt is mined from. So it's like a local ingredient, and that's one of the, I wrote an article once on when local isn't the best option.
Yeah.
Because I didn't buy their salt, I bought sea salt from elsewhere. But yeah,
I would definitely encourage people. And
that's another thing people always ask me about is, what kind of salt do you use? Yeah. And, you know, because they always say use pickling salt. And I never use pickling salt. I just use sea salt for everything. I buy Redmond Real Salt, which is the kind that has like the minerals, like looks like sand in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that for fermenting. And yeah, you're going to get some of like the gritty stuff that settles to the bottom. But just, you know, it settles to the bottom and then you don't have to.
Right.
Fish that out. But that's the kind I buy it in 25 pound bags, and you can buy it on the internet. That's how I used to buy it, and now I get it at the local co-op. They order it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I always have like 50 or 100 pounds of salt in the pantry, because it's one of those beneficial things to have around. And when you're doing a lot of fermenting or salt curing of olives, it's beneficial to have large amounts of salt around. And then I also want to talk about fermenting. I want to talk about salt curing, because that's also mm-hmm. something that's kind of along the same lines as fermenting, because fermenting is essentially a form of like liquid salt curing. But yeah, you can salt cure meats and olives. I've salt cured some olives where essentially you pack stuff in salt, like surrounded by salt, and it draws out the water, and then the salt goes in there and helps keep. I mean, salt is a wonderful thing.
And that's a very old...
It's a very old method. I mean, it's like the original way to keep your food safe and to preserve it.
Especially
because
meats and,
baddies, as I like to say, mm-hmm. don't like salt. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you have a wound that you just can't get to heal, throw some salt on there. Mm-hmm. It's going to burn like crazy, but that's going to heal right up. Mm-hmm. It's going to help dry it out and kill the bad bacteria and the bad stuff. And I mean, salt is an amazing thing. It really, really is. And it's definitely something that I would encourage everyone to keep a big bag of salt around. Because, mm-hmm. you know, your electric goes out and stuff, your meat starts thawing out in your freezer. I mean, if you've ever read Grapes of Wrath, pull out some Rubbermaid containers, if you have them, or like big wooden crates, and just pack all your meat in salt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to keep. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have to worry about, I mean, you might as well spend $50 and buy 50 pounds of salt instead of buying a generator to keep your freezer running. And then if that ever does happen, you can preserve your meat and you'll mm-hmm. still have it. So, I mean, it's one of those great things to keep around just because, and it doesn't go bad, and it's very handy to have.
And So I would definitely encourage you to try some fermented recipes and some preserved things like that.
I would say start with sauerkraut.
Yeah.
If you want to get into fermenting, make a batch of sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be amazed at the taste, I think. And
because at worst, you're going to lose, what, $1 on a head of cabbage or two? Or
maybe three if it's local.
Yeah.
3 to 5, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, try it. And try eating the sauerkraut right out of the jar. Mm-hmm. And it may take you eating it 5 or 6 times to get used to the flavor, but I guarantee you're going to start to like the flavor. We eat sauerkraut when I have a batch. We eat it every morning. We eat maybe a quarter or half a cup with our breakfast. Mm-hmm. And try making an omelet. So make an omelet and throw some sausage in there and throw in a little sauerkraut right at the end. You don't want to heat it up too much or you kill the probiotics, but throw a little sauerkraut in there. A sauerkraut and sausage omelet is amazing.
Because mm-hmm. you get a nice little crunch
in
there.
And sauerkraut is really good for breakfast. We mm-hmm. love it for breakfast.
And so what we're going to do as far as fermenting, because Susie has posted some...
I have posted some recipes
on Eat Outside the Bag. Mm-hmm. And so we'll post links to those in the show notes. If you want to try sauerkraut or kimchi, which is kind of a...
It's like a Korean sauerkraut, kind of, but it has hot spice. Peppers and spices and so that kind
like,
of stuff in it.
If you like heat, then this one is the one to try.
Garlic.
Really good with different foods that are good with something that has a little bit of a hot side to it, and you still get the crunch, and it's cool.
And the kimchi is also, man, if you want to stay healthy in the winter... Mm-hmm. Having some kimchi in your refrigerator is going to be way better than like getting a flu shot or any of that stuff. You eat some of that every day and you're not going to get sick. Or if you do get sick, you eat some kimchi and it's going to knock it out of you within, you know, a day or two. It's studies have been done on this stuff and it's just remarkable. Do a little Googling and read up about the health benefits of kimchi. It's just quite remarkable. And think about all the goodness. I mean, kimchi's got hot pepper in it. Hot pepper has capsaicin, which is good for your blood vessels. It's good for keeping bad bacteria away. And then it's got ginger in it, which is good as like a natural anti-inflammatory, and it's boosts your immune system. And it's got garlic in it, which garlic is pretty much like good for anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Boosts your immune
away.
System. Yeah. I mean, and kimchi has all this stuff in it and some cabbage. I mean, you've the health benefits of
and
cruciferous vegetables, you know, or tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely. Kimchi is like the winter sauerkraut. We eat a lot of kimchi in the winter.
There's only two problems. When you get too much garlic.
Yes.
Because then you get a little bit of the garlic breath going. But as long as you and your spouse eat it, you'll be okay.
Right.
And we have found that out. And the other thing is you need to have a box of tissues handy, because when you get a hot batch with way too much pepper in it, or hot pepper.
Sometimes I make a really hot batch. It depends. You know, I make the batches
your nose is running and your eyes are watering and it's good.
Oh, yeah. It clears out your sinuses, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's better
without
than
a problem.
Better than Sudafed. That's for sure.
So the last method of preserving that we're going to talk about is freezing, which is definitely something that we do. And we've been doing it less recently, but one thing that we use this for a lot is for fruits, because fruits normally do come on in a flush.
For berries.
Yeah,
definitely for berries. Freezing is great.
Because you'll have about a week, it seems, depending on the berry.
Strawberries are pretty good. But
yeah, and dehydrating a lot of fruits are good, but fruits also have a very high water content. So a lot of times, like with blueberries, if you dehydrate blueberries, it takes forever and you're left with nothing.
Right.
But freezing blueberries is a great way to preserve them, because then you can take them out and pop them into, you know, blueberry muffins, blueberry pancakes, you know, whirl them up in a blender and make a blueberry smoothie or whatever you want with that. So what are some of the other things that we freeze?
I freeze peas.
Mm-hmm.
I always freeze peas. I rarely freeze corn, but a lot of people I know prefer freezing corn as opposed mm-hmm. to canning it. Some people prefer to can it. I pretty much freeze garlic scapes often if I have a ton of garlic, because usually I plant, you know, 150 or 200 cloves. So I usually have a lot of scapes all at once, which is a little too much to eat. Mm-hmm. Some people make pesto with it and freeze that. I usually just freeze the scapes cut up and sauteed. And then I freeze peas, which you blanch. I freeze, if I have an extra flush of spinach that we can't eat, I'll often give it a quick cook and whir it up. in like the blender, or sometimes I freeze it as is and then just chop it up finely with my knife once I pull it out of the freezer. And then you can throw that in soups or use it to make spinach pasta or something like that. And then we freeze blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. Most of our meat is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Which once we get a smoker, we'll probably end up smoking a lot more of our meat. And, you know, as far as fermenting also, I mean, fermenting can also be done with sausages and other kinds of meats. I mean, a lot of the old style of salamis and pepperonis and those kinds of things were fermented, naturally fermented. And you can still buy those some places. And if you can find those, I would highly recommend looking them up and getting some, because they're really fantastic. So fermenting can also work for those, but freezing, yeah. I mean, I don't freeze a ton anymore. I really kind of moved away from eating things out of season. Mm-hmm. I do freeze some peas because sometimes you just want peas and your beef stew.
Yeah, it's good for soup.
But often, I mean, now I just don't do it as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Well, and the reason is because you know,
it takes time and input in the summer, which would prefer using another. It's kind of like what we talked about back, and I don't even remember what episode of the podcast that was, but picking your priorities and figuring out what's a priority for you. You know, and a priority for me is eating seasonally, because I want to eat the food that is the most healthful food that I can find.
Mm-hmm. Which is what is fresh.
And after a lot of research, it was what is in season and what I can find locally and fresh. Or vegetables that kind of, you know, like a potato and stuff. I don't know that a fresh potato right out of the ground is any healthier than a potato from the root cellar.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, potatoes are kind of made to be stored that way. That's the way they are. So you're not like, you're not going jumping through hoops to keep it around. And you can probably ferment potatoes. I don't know. I need to read up a little more on that. I'm currently reading through a book about fermentation. But yeah, I mean, for me, I transitioned from more traditional food preservation methods simply because, mostly because I want to eat seasonally. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate the diversity that brings to our diet. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to become complacent and to become like get stuck in a rut in your diet if you're eating seasonally, because you can't do it.
Right.
You know, you can't eat peas all year long.
Right.
And I freeze very few peas, you know, maybe 6 pints and that's all I'll freeze.
And that's mainly for soups. Yeah.
Or like for chicken and dumplings or something like that. But yeah, I mean, and that's because I like frozen peas. I think they're really good. But sometimes we have to force ourselves with inconvenience, kind of, you know, to eat a little more seasonally and to, you know. And I think that's
part. But the interesting thing, you say, you know, we have to force ourselves with inconvenience, but I really think that the pluses outweigh the minuses
it. Right, and it's not necessarily inconvenient, but I think that sometimes in order
it's our American supermarket mentality.
And it's not necessarily inconvenient all the time, but sometimes you need a little bit of inconvenience to force yourself out of the rut that you've built for yourself and to make yourself think a little outside the box and do something differently, because it's not really any more work or it's not really any more inconvenient to peel a carrot than it is to open up a thing of green or peas or something from the freezer, you know. The slight inconvenience at the moment that you feel, the things you feel are inconvenient, are a great way to force change, kind of.
And you do have to be a little bit more creative and go seeking out ways to prepare things that maybe you're not used to preparing.
Right.
But that also expands your palate and expands, you know, the diversity of foods that you're eating, which is good for you as well, because each different food has different nutrients, different things that it provides in the season that it's supposed to provide them.
Right.
And so then you're getting all of these different nutrients and all the different things that you need. So yeah, and we've been, how long, I mean, it's been three or four years since we've been really trying to eat seasonally and trying to be mindful of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that we're, 100% strict on either. I mean, we eat pizza throughout the year.
Yeah.
We eat pizza seasonally.
But it changes seasonally. Right. That's the thing. Yeah. That's the beauty too of learning a few. I think I talked about this on the blog a couple months ago when I made crepes.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to like a few basic things,
mm-hmm.
a few basic recipes that are pretty simple and pretty easy that will transition throughout the seasons, make it a lot more easier to eat this way. So you can mm-hmm. make crepes and you can say when it's strawberry season,
yeah.
put some yogurt and some strawberries. And, if you happen to have raspberries at the same time, throw some raspberries in there. I mean, and then sprinkle a little cinnamon on top. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have strawberries right now. So what did we put in our crepes when we had them a month ago? I happened to have some apples. So I cut up some apples and cooked them with some cinnamon and we had apples.
Mm-hmm.
You can also stuff them with caramelized onions and maybe some sauteed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to feel like you're eating the same thing over and over again,
right?
Because it's different. And mm-hmm. your pizza can be the same way. So in the spring, you can have pizza with some asparagus and then maybe some prosciutto and maybe like some, I don't know, what kind of cheese would go with that? I don't know.
Asparagus and prosciutto are pretty strong. So something a little mild.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I think a little bit of Romano on there would be good. And some fresh olive oil. Maybe if you're really crazy, a couple of pine nuts.
Oh, pine nuts. Yeah.
But not a lot of cheese.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. But yeah. And then in the summer, you can do fresh tomatoes on your mm-hmm. pizza and basil and like fresh mozzarella cheese, and make like a caprese pizza. And then in the winter, it's not weird to do butternut mm-hmm. squash bacon and like blue cheese or something like that on a pizza. That would be great. Mm-hmm. We had pizzas for New Year's and it was horseradish cream sauce
mm-hmm.
with roast beef left over from Christmas mm-hmm. and then some what kind of cheese did I put on there? It was a mix of mozzarella and like a really good aged provolone, so mm-hmm. like a really sharp provolone. And some caramelized onions.
Yeah.
And that was a fantastic pizza.
Yeah, everybody commented how awesome it was.
It tastes different than, it's the same meal,
mm-hmm.
but it tastes completely different because it's transitioning with you throughout the season. So, mm-hmm. You can learn, omelets are the same way. You could eat omelets once a week throughout the year and never eat the same omelet.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just throwing in there whatever you find. We eat a lot of omelets. And you can learn something like a hash. A hash is a very traditional way of just eating whatever you got around. And it tastes different depending on what vegetables and stuff you're throwing in there. So we also eat a lot of, it's kind of like a hash, but we'll chop up vegetables. And then we do it a lot in the summer. So we'll chop up zucchini and some onions and some garlic and then throw a bunch of tomatoes, chopped tomatoes in there. And then once that cooks down a little, then we poach eggs on top.
Mm-hmm.
Just learning a few simple, quick recipes like that. Roasts. Roasts are fantastic. So in the spring, you can have a roast with a big salad on the side. And maybe in the summer, you can do it with like a zucchini salad, fresh tomatoes, or a fresh salsa or something like that, or gazpacho or something like that. And then in the fall and the winter, you can do roasted root vegetables, and your spices can change throughout the season. So it makes mm-hmm. it taste different throughout the season. So maybe in the fall, you're using rosemary. In the summer, you're using cilantro. In the spring, you're using chives, and maybe some garlic or something like that. So, you're eating the same thing, but you're not eating the same mm-hmm. thing,
Yeah.
So
I can just picture everyone, because we get a lot of comments that say, I had to listen to this one twice to take notes. And I'm just picturing people furiously writing everything you just said. And, oh, crap, rewind. Oh, rewind. Ah.
And that would be a great cookbook, I think.
Yeah.
Like, just do
omelets seasonally.
I don't know. You could come up with probably 20 simple recipe, like learn this basic technique or this basic
recipe. That sounds like a good ebook.
And then do the different seasons.
Yep.
And, do each one of those four ways or, 10 of those
That sounds like a good book.
It does. That's I think it'd be a great book.
Big book idea.
Or maybe four ebooks.
All of you that are listening are under NDA. You cannot steal the idea for this cookbook. We are going to write this cookbook. You are under it. By listening to this podcast, you have signed an NDA.
You need to say that really fast at the end.
Thank you.
But, I mean, yeah, I think that it's just, I mean, you just have to learn some basic skills and have fun, play around, try some different things. Every now and then I make a combination that's like, eh, it's not quite as good as others. And when you eat, be mindful of what you're eating and try to figure out what you like and what you dislike about it and change it the next time. Mm-hmm. Learn some basic herbs that go with different things. I mean, it's all about learning a few basic cooking skills that we've kind of, it's not that we've lost them. I just think it's something you kind of have to figure out on your own because everybody's tastes are different. Mm-hmm. So learning what your family in particular likes, because maybe your family just doesn't like cilantro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love cilantro, but maybe nobody in your family likes cilantro. Don't grow cilantro and don't use cilantro.
Mm-hmm.
But try coriander. They might like coriander, which is the seeds of the cilantro, because that has a really interesting, like, lemony flavor when you're making a curry or something. So try that. Try a bunch of different spices. Think outside of, like, the Mrs. Dash or whatever most whatever most people use. Grow fresh herbs and use fresh herbs. You know, grow a thyme plant. You can add thyme to pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. Grab a couple branches and throw it in just about everything that you cook.
Well, and speaking of preserving, I mean, with herbs, it's typically it's as simple as hanging them and mm-hmm. letting them dry, and then you can use them throughout the season when you don't have them fresh.
Right. And herbs add another layer of flavor and another layer of
vitamins, nutritional and value, and minerals, and
most herbs have more nutritional value than fruits and vegetables do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, adding a teaspoon of herbs to your steak is like adding a side of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that and don't think about that. And
And adds flavor, you know, and just everything.
Yeah. It just makes it interesting.
It's a good thing to do.
Spice up your life.
And it all comes back to, as you mentioned a couple times during this, just being more mindful of your food, you know.
Yeah. Sit down at a table.
Turn off the TV. And turn off the iPad and
taste your food.
Yeah.
Like, take the time to taste what you're eating. And if you've made it, try to pick out the different things that you put in there. I mean,
we do that a lot. We analyze the meal after we're done.
Yeah. And say, oh, well, I think that could, you know, like this last recipe of this roast that I made, I put juniper berries in there because I've read a bunch of different places that's super traditional for venison. I've never eaten juniper berries before. Typically, my roasts contain, depending on the season, thyme, rosemary, you know, bay leaves, that kind of stuff. So I was like, well, I'll put some juniper berries in there. And I left out the thyme because I kind of wanted the juniper berries to be
The focus.
I did add some bay leaves, but, you know, and it's interesting because it added a sweet, definitely a sweet layer to it, but it wouldn't go against like the flavor of thyme either, I think. So I can add that in on top of that. But sometimes it's about figuring all that stuff out and figuring out what you like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Try to, when you make something, I mean, if you can't remember, keep the recipe there. And when you eat a bite of it, see if you can pick out the thyme and what that adds to the recipe. See if you can pick out, like, I mean, it's amazing, adding a squeeze of lemon juice to just almost anything you cook really brightens all those flavors and brings them out so you can taste them. And just, I mean, adding a little layer of acid to your food adds one of those layers that kind of helps balance it out. I mean, you almost need some salt and some acid. It's like making a good salad dressing.
Mm-hmm.
You need a couple things to balance it out. But then once you figure out what those basic things are, you can get really creative with everything that goes in there and all the flavors you want. Mm-hmm. But figure out those balances. Like, you know, try adding a teaspoon or two of apple cider vinegar or lemon juice or lime juice or something like that to your recipes. And then try adding some freshly ground pepper and a little bit of sea salt and that kind of stuff. And figure out that balance of what works and what doesn't.
And the books to go along with this episode, I don't think we
there
should.
There could be so many.
Yeah, there's a ton. And we're going to recommend five today. And with these, I don't think we should talk about them too much because we're already running really long. This is, again, another one of those topics that we're like, oh, geez, are we going to be able to...
do a couple podcasts on it.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe the different aspects we could. If you want to hear more about this, then let us know in the show notes. Or if there's a specific thing or a question, I mean, maybe we could revisit this next week and it could be a whole nother episode. But there's five books that we're going to put in there. And if you just want to say a little bit about each one of these.
I will. Elliot Coleman. I mean, I really don't need to say any more, do I?
Yeah, Elliot Coleman. There he is.
Winter Harvest Handbook and Four Season Harvest. If you want to live seasonally and have a little more fresh food from your own garden, these two books, amazing. I would recommend Winter Harvest Handbook first if you haven't read Four Season Harvest already, because that was his most recent book. But that one's really interesting. But yeah, he goes through and I can't remember. I know in Four Season Harvest for sure, in the back of the book, he has like a chart that helps you figure out when you need to plant it depending on your zone. But yeah, great books. Read these books. If you've never even heard about or you want to learn a little bit more about winter gardening, this is like the go-to thing. And we visited Elliot Coleman's farm in the middle of October 2 years ago. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're so in that weird thing that you grow your veggies, you know, you like till up your garden, plant it, and then you till it under in October. I mean, that's not the way it has to be. And so you can grow a lot more of your food and eat a lot more seasonally just from your own little garden with minimal protection, really. It's not like you need a heated greenhouse or anything. So those are the books. I won't go into that anymore because he does a much better job than I do.
he wrote the book on
he
it,
wrote
you
the
would
book.
Say.
Yes, he knows what he's doing, that's for sure. And then Root Cellaring, Naturally Cold Storage for Fruits and Vegetables, an interesting book about how to preserve things kind of the old-fashioned way in root cellaring. And there's definitely something to it. You can't just, I mean, you can kind of, we tried at the other house, throw stuff in the basement, but you need a little more humidity. Sometimes a garage is better. I don't know. That might be a good topic for a podcast, like alternative ways to root cellar things when you don't have a root cellar. Then The Art of Fermentation, I'm currently reading that book, and it's really, really good. It's a big, heavy, thick book that has a lot of extras in it besides just recipes. If you don't want all the extra information, Wild Fermentation is the book that you want. It's a little book, chock full of all kinds of recipes, fermenting recipes. It's a really valuable addition to your bookshelf, but it's written by the same person as The Art of Fermentation, which is kind of like the second book in the series, I guess. I don't know, the expanded, the new and improved, kind of. So yeah, those definitely good options for your bookshelf. But yeah.
And that brings us to onto Brian's, or Geeky Corner with Brian, which we still don't have a jingle for. So this week in the Geeky Corner, it's actually I'm going to share one that I use in my daily life. I'm kind of a procrastinator. Hi, I'm Brian. What do you mean? Yeah, I'm a really bad procrastinator, actually. And so if especially when it's something that I need to get done, or I'm sorry, not need to get done, but something that I don't want to do that needs to get done. So right now, finishing up a project that has been going on for a while, and I just really have to finish it up, but I really don't want to, so I keep putting it off and finding other things to do, hence the procrastination, since that's like the definition of procrastination. So in looking around a while ago, I found something called the Pomodoro Technique, and I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. It's pomodorotechnique.com, and the basic premise, or the way that I use it, is that you work for 25 minutes and you have 5 minute rest. And so you set a timer. Now I found a couple different timers, but the one that I like the most is called the 30-30 app. And it's an app from the iTunes store for your iPhone or for your iPad. And if you don't have one of those, then you can just get a timer, you know, a kitchen timer even. I like the 3030 app because you can actually set up different things to do throughout your day. So the Pomodoro technique, if you really get into it and take it to its full extent, you plan out your day and how many Pomodoros each thing that you need to get done during the day is going to need. So if, you know, you've got one project you need to work on, that would be four Pomodoros, and then you can get two phone calls done during one Pomodoro, and then, you know, so on and so forth. And then you hit your schedule. And so you work for 25 minutes, and then as soon as the buzzer rings, you get up and you go do something else. Well, with the 3030 app, you can actually make, I just have a generic one that's Pomodoro. So it runs for 25 minutes, a little chime dings, the screen changes color to let me know it's my break time. I get up and I move around for 5 minutes. And then I hear the ding, I come back in, I work for 25 minutes. And it really forces you to be mindful about your work time. Mm-hmm. Because that's one problem I have. My procrastination takes the form of distracting myself with stuff that doesn't matter, such as Facebook, or looking up what the weather's going to be, or wondering about that chainsaw and how many cc's the engine is, and, you know, so on and so forth. And so when you're in a Pomodoro, the rule that I love and follow is that the Pomodoro is sacred. And so when that timer is running, you do nothing but the task that you're working on. So it really causes you, because, you know, I have it sitting on the iPad and it's this big green screen and you can see the countdown of exactly how many minutes and seconds you have. And so it really forces you to be mindful of work. I must work. I cannot, you know, switch over to Google and search for the steel chainsaw 090, how many cc's is it and how long of a bar can it take? So it's a great little app. I think it's like, you can use it for free, but I think it's like $2. And I paid the $2 just because, I mean, it has made me a lot of money by the work that I've gotten done because
of it.
And
it also, I think it forces you to then get up and do something after 25 minutes.
Right,
because that's,
which is good.
That's healthy as well, to get up and to give your eyes a break and your wrist a break and just to get up
your
posture and
break,
your back
yeah.
and your mind and all of that kind of stuff. So, I mean,
especially
I think
if you do something creative, you know,
right.
working for 25 minutes. And I do, you know, being a web developer and programmer and the IT department for Chiots Run. You know, I'm at my computer a lot, 8 to 10, sometimes 12 hours a day. And so I do, you know, struggle with repetitive stress injuries and those kinds of things. And so, yeah, having that 5 minute break and I get up and I stretch my wrists and stretch my back and everything. So that's definitely a good thing to do. And so the PomodoroTechnique.com, and then I'll put a link to the 3030 app, for the iTunes store. And, so that's Brian's Geeky Corner for this week. But I did want to talk about one more thing because we had a suggestion and we've been talking about it for a while and I just wanted to see what everybody thought. So obviously a big thing on the internet is forums and, you know, discussion forums and that type of thing. And I think on Chiots Run, we've really used the comment section as kind of a forum. Mm-hmm. But the only problem with that is that a lot of that content, and that's one of the amazing things I think about the blog, is the comment section is so rich with content. You know, a lot of times you'll have a very simple post, but ask a really good question and people will just comment, you know, forever on it and just have great content. But that content sort of gets lost
it's buried.
It's part of that post that then, you know, gets quote unquote old and goes away. So we've talked about in the past about doing a forum. Now, the reason I don't like forums and the reason that when my clients come to me for web development and say, hey, you know, we want a forum and we want e-commerce and we want, you know, Flash, I usually try to talk them out of
animated
at least,
GIFs.
Yeah, at least
and hot links.
And we want a little construction guy that's working and it says under construction. No, it's not 1994.
No, you just offended somebody there.
Yeah, he probably did.
That on their
and
website.
You know what? I don't care because that should not be on your website. If it's under construction, don't put it up or hire me to get it done.
The worst is when it's been up like that for 5 years. Yeah.
You know it's from 1994.
They have the under construction and then they have like copyright, you know, like 2001. You're like, I think okay. I'm going to go with another business.
Yeah, right. But that's the way with forums too. Forums, I find, first of all, there are so many of them out there. And especially when it comes to, I know that we're focusing a lot more on simple living, but when it comes to gardening and those types of things, there are just, you know, a plethora of forums out there. But also, I don't like it when forums only have a few posts or when they get stale, or you go there and you join up and only to find that, you know, the last post was 2 years ago. But we've kind of had a suggestion with the 5x5 garden idea that we shared last week, and Susie shared it on the blog, and we just had an overwhelming response. We really just think it's going to be an awesome program. But a suggestion was made that with the 5x5 that maybe we should have a forum, and that would be a good way for different people to ask questions, to share ideas. And again, we've been discussing this for a number of years, actually, mm-hmm. about making a forum. But it's also something then that we have to maintain, that I have to maintain technologically, and that we have to moderate. And
right.
We could probably get around that in a way, because I'm sure we could find a couple readers that would be willing to,
right.
We could give them moderator permissions and they could, you know, if somebody gets on there and is like, you're an idiot, that we could ban them and
please buy my cheap printer cartridges or whatever.
That we could take care of that. So there are different ways around that. But again, like I said, it's something that technologically we would have to maintain. But if it's something that is worthwhile to you, to the listener, to the reader, to the blog reader, then we want that to be something that we offer. So we're kind of put this out here as a question. Do you think that forums would be beneficial? Is it something that you use? And you don't have to go on and on about how stupid they are if you don't like them. But if it's something, if it's something that you think that you would use, and if you think it's something that would be beneficial for the Chiots Run community, then let us know.
I actually love forums. I used to be on the Freedom Gardeners forum way mm-hmm. back when I first started gardening. I spent a lot of time on there, and I actually met a lot of people on there. Mm-hmm. And they can be a really valuable place to find information and a valuable place to offer some of the information and some of the knowledge that you've gained. Mm-hmm. I have lost. That is no longer a priority for me. Mm-hmm. To go on forums. And, you know, as I started this blog and spent more and more of my effort on the blog, I had to mm-hmm. kind of
focus on that
as opposed to reading other blogs and being in forums and being involved in all mm-hmm. of that, because all of my time, you know, all of my online available time had to be shifted towards that. So
forum became the comments of Chiots Run.
Yeah,
so.
And you meet people, I mean, you meet interesting people over there, and you get new friends mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So they're interesting. I mean, some of them are kind of lame, but
exactly. And that's the thing, is I don't want to put something on our website that is going to be lame, because then when people come, they're going to see lameness and go away. And I don't want us to be lame. I mean, so let us know. What do you think? Forums or no forums? That is the question. And that then brings us on to, where are we at? That then brings us on to, let me look at the time.
We should stop. We should do this. Should we move this to next week?
An hour and 36 minutes. What,
around the run?
Around the run. Yeah, we've got a lot of around the run stuff, but none of it is kind of pressing. So I think we could probably move that to next week. We're trying to keep these shows under 2 hours. I don't want to get any more 4-star reviews on iTunes because it's too long. Just listen to segments of it. You don't need to sit down and listen to the whole thing. Jeez. So
maybe we should have chapters and have.
No, like that is more production work that I'm not going to do.
When I was a kid, we had chapters. We had this Cinderella record, you know, mm-hmm. vinyl. And it had the book at the front of the album, and you would read. And then at the end of the chapter, it would go, bing.
Oh, yeah.
And you would have to turn the page for the mm-hmm. next thing. Maybe we could do that.
You can actually do that within podcasts, especially through the iTunes store, because there's a format called the M4A format that you can add chapter marks, and you can even do different artwork for each of the chapter marks within the podcast. But because of the way we do downloads, that wouldn't work because we have
people
to do MP3s.
Just pause it.
Yeah.
And restart.
Or
the next day.
You can just not listen and not give us a 4-star review on iTunes. Can you tell I'm bitter about those? And one of them was our good friend, but he didn't say it was too long. He just, I think he's one of those guys that, you know, you really gotta, it's gotta be NPR for it. And even NPR, I'm, ugh.
It's all the same.
They all talk like Ira Glass. Anyway.
Not that we hate NPR. We listen to it sometimes, but.
But there, after everybody a while, talks the same.
You can't listen to too many
everybody
shows.
Everybody talks like Ira Glass.
That's true. Everybody has
it's
to.
Just,
and you might as well just listen to him and not bother with the other people.
And now that I've pointed that out, it's going to drive everybody nuts. It's like those little marks they used to have in the theater. Once somebody points them out, you can't not see
That's
them.
That's right.
But yeah, listen to Ira Glass's inflection. And
listen
then
to what's it, This American Life.
This American Life. And then go listen to any, pretty much any other show on NPR. And they all talk like him.
Even all of his, when you listen to This American Life, because it's usually three segments and it's a storyteller or some other, I mean, I guess they're kind of like audio people telling these stories. They all kind of sound like him too. It's interesting.
Same inflection, the same like... Yeah. Pacing and just
maybe they just
the same accent, like they put emphasis on certain. Oh my gosh, it drives me crazy.
It's one of
which is why we don't listen to This American Life anymore.
Yeah, we used to listen to it all the time. It's one of it's one of those things when you notice it,
then it's done, then it's over.
That's right.
Forget it.
Honeymoon is over.
So we'll mention to wrap things up the support. If, you know, using the Amazon affiliate link, a lot of people are doing that. We love that. Thank you. The Amazon wish list. So what we're going to do is this week, you can buy me, Mr. Chiyotes, because you appreciate my efforts as the Chiyotes run IT department. You can buy me a birthday gift from the wish list, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. But also visit Clarington Forge, buy some tools, because we get a little bit of money when you buy tools from them,
and they have
great tools. Yeah, click through our blog. Come to Chiyotes or to CultivateSimple.com and click through.
Tool,
yeah, definitely. And if you need a garden tool this spring, the potato fork that I got for Susie is
amazing.
Crazy.
It's
It must weigh 30 pounds, too.
It's pricey. It's,
but it is solid.
It is a piece of art, that's for sure. You can tell that it's made by a craftsman.
Mm-hmm. And also mountain rose herbs. A lot of the stuff that Susie talked about today.
Yeah, like the kelp and all of that kind of stuff. I get all that from mountain rose herbs. And a lot of the herbs and spices I buy on a lot of my stuff, whatever I don't grow myself. I like the astragalus root that I talked about. I buy it from them. The bladder rack, the dulse, sea lettuce, all the kelps that I buy. They have a lot of interesting varieties of salt. They have a really good smoked salt that you can buy. And when I cured my own bacon, I made a batch with regular salt, and then I made a batch with the smoked salt and smoked pepper. And it tasted
really
like
good.
I had smoked the bacon. Mm-hmm. It was really, really good. And it's really good to add to your sausages and stuff. They have a great collection of, you know, they have like black lava salt, and I think I have some Hawaiian balsamic salt. And all that interesting stuff that, I don't know, it's kind of like getting a new paint or something. If you're creative, it can really help you do something new and interesting in the kitchen when you have a good collection of spices and herbs and that kind of stuff to use.
And so come on over to CultivateSimple.com or ChiyotesRun.com if you're on the blog. And in the sidebar link, there's a Mountain Rose Herbs logo. Click on that. We make a little bit of money off that. And
their stuff is great.
And another little quick tip, and I think we've shared this before, but their labels come off their bags really easily.
And then
so you can put them into glass jars, put the lid on them, and then take that label and slap it on the glass jar.
Yep.
You should really take a photo of our pantry, because it's just jars with Mountain Rose Herbs labels.
Yeah.
I mean, hundreds of them. So, but yeah, that helps us out a little bit, makes us just a little bit of money to help out with the cost of running the blog and the hosting and those types of things. And also, I've mentioned it before, if you want to leave us a review in iTunes, that would be great. Just go to iTunes and search for Cultivate Simple, and you can leave us a review there. Also, like Chiyotes Run, we broke 1,000 likes.
So yeah,
we broke the glass ceiling that took so long to get through. But Yeah, if you like Chiot's Run on Facebook, if you're on Facebook.
Yeah, I post stuff over there that I don't, you know, I post stuff over there kind of through, not every day, but I post interesting stuff over there that I find, articles, things I'm reading sometimes. If I find...
It's kind of a stream of consciousness kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
things that I'm doing, often things that I'm reading about and researching, I'll post on there and also tweet it, you know, so you can follow me on Twitter. If you, I know that a couple of readers have said, oh, you really need to have like a little thing in your sidebar that's saying what you're doing. Well, I'm doing that on Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. So you can find me there. And I have my tweets on the website down at the mm-hmm. bottom. But yeah, like a couple months ago, I found this really interesting video about crop rotation and no-till gardening and that kind of stuff. No-till, I mean, this guy has like 1,000-some acre farm and he's doing no-till grain. I think it was grain raising.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about cover crops and all that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. So I put that on my Facebook page and I tweeted it, you know, and one of my friends was like, that is an awesome video. Thanks so much for posting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interesting stuff like that, that I find articles that earlier this week. I've been reading about hedgerows and what kind of plants to put in hedgerows and the benefits and all that kind of stuff. So I've put a couple articles on my Twitter and my Facebook that I've found really valuable to sources of information for myself. So yeah, I put that kind of stuff out there.
And you can find all those links on the website over on the left-hand side. There's the little gray buttons that are half hidden. If you hover over them, they pop out because, you know, our IT department is super slick here. and actually, we stole that off of another blog. But
it's
but
like
yeah.
a plug-in, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a plug-in. Yeah. But you can find all of those links and follow what Susie's doing throughout the week and what we're doing around here at Chiot's Run. And so... If you have any questions, any comments, come back over to CultivateSimple.com. Leave a comment in the show notes.
If you want to hear more about stocking your larder and seasonal eating, that it might be, if people are really interested, it might be beneficial to do another podcast on this topic. And we will be doing one on cast iron because there's a huge amount of interest in that. And clearly, I need to get working on my ebook.
Which, speaking of which, a quick update before we go. You did start working on your ebook for seed starting.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, you said it was
I have 16 pages right
16
now.
16 pages, and that's without any photos.
Right, and I'm trying to put pictures in, but I'm having this issue with, because you have to export it to a certain format, and you have to put the pictures in a specific way. It's not just like setting it up in the normal. I mean, I do a lot of...
desktop publishing.
Like desktop publishing for my job. So I'm generally doing it in a way that you're exporting to PDF or sending it to a print shop to print it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like that at all. You have to do it in a very specific, like very base level, but an interesting, weird way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to figure out exactly how to. It's definitely a learning curve to figure out how to do it so you can export it in the proper. I mean, I could just do it in, you know, the way I normally do it and look pretty and export to PDF, but that's not the right way to do it. So there's definitely a bit of a learning curve figuring out exactly how to do this the right way so that everybody can download it and read it on their whatever reader that they have.
And when we launch that first ebook, we're actually going to be launching a new section of the website that's going to be kind of a support section that's not only going to have the sale of the ebooks, but also is going to have a membership for Cultivate or for Chiot's Run, which is going to, we're going to talk about that a little bit more as we develop the idea. And we're thinking about, because this was another idea, hopefully everybody's tuned into the end, because I wonder if we get to like the, you know, hey, follow us on Facebook, and then everybody shuts it off.
Shuts
so it'll
off.
Be interesting to see how many people hear this. But we're thinking about an idea for a t-shirt.
Maybe we should do a giveaway at the end of one of our podcasts to see how many people are listening.
We're thinking about doing a t-shirt, and not that the only thing with t-shirts, because we actually, believe it or not, had a little business once
we've
where we were
so
doing
many
t-shirts.
Businesses.
And so we would do it like through Zazzle.com or one of those websites that they print it for you. And so it would be a little bit more expensive, but we were thinking about doing a t-shirt based around crap, because everybody seems to love that word. We've gotten some emails and people write it out with, you know, C-R-A-A-A-P. So
Mike, who knew? My grandma's.
Yeah, your grandma's.
My grandma lives on.
Oh, if she only
probably
knew how she was living
she
on.
Would have hoped.
Her legacy lives on in crap. But yeah, so we're thinking about doing that, but we need a good phrase for that. So if you can, what was that
what
one
was
we
the
came
one
up?
I did? earlier today. So
we were thinking about this. We were tossing things back and forth.
Fight crap, cultivate simple, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So if you have any suggestions for that.
Crap.
If you have any suggestions for that, let us know about that too. So, goodness, this was a long show. But, you know, I guess the point is just be mindful and cultivate simple.
Seasonally.
Seasonally.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountain sides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the tree. I'd rather see my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the tree. Open to suggestions. I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the trees, and go to fly.